Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by Sports Drink, your digital water cooler. Sports Drink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and to hate your favorite team. A rising tide lifts all boats, so go check them out online or in social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open Instagram and type in Sports Drink, spelled like sports drink but without the vowels. So S-P-R-T-S-D-R-N-K. All we ask is that you close the door behind you. We're trying not to let out the funk. What's up, guys? Back for our second team in the NFC East. This time, the newly named Washington Commanders, who were defending NFC East champions coming out of the 2020 season. They had a losing record, but they were the ones that were standing, the last man standing in the NFC East to make a playoff run. And, they were the team that seemingly were the only ones that gave Tampa Bay a game in their playoff run to the Super Bowl in 2020. They seem poised to do it again in 2021. A lot of high hopes going into the year, and unfortunately, it didn't work out. They got off to another slow start. They had another like mid-season run there, got themselves to 500 after like a 2-5 start. But they kind of fell apart there at the end. Had this weird schedule where they had 5 straight division games at the end of the season and whatnot, and things just did not go well for that team. And here we are in 2022, looking to manage. They trade for Carson Wentz, and unfortunately this happened yesterday after I spoke to Brian, but they just re-signed Terry McLaurin, and we talked about him and his future with the team before they officially signed the extension and whatnot. So that's why we don't mention it during our talk, but. And this is also a division, as I'm sure you've heard us talk about with the Giants, you hear us talk about here, and I've already spoken with the Eagles and the Cowboys. Everybody mentions the fact nobody repeats as division champion in this division, so it's wide open. Never mind the fact that the Cowboys won last year, and on paper they're still the best team. In the past 16 years, that hasn't mattered, or 17, 18 years. 04 was the last time that the Eagles went back-to-back in 03 and 04. So it's been almost 20 years since somebody won a back-to-back division, which means the NFC East is anybody's division to claim going into 2022, or at least history dictates everybody's got a shot to win this thing. So we had a lot of fun talking to our guest. He told me to call him Brian, but he goes by Mr. Who on Twitter and such, and that's the handle that he has. He's from the Washington Commanders Declassified podcast, and I had a blast talking to him. So let's go ahead and make it happen. This is the Washington Commanders preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out loud. As we make our journey through the NFC East, our second stop through the division leads us to DC or Virginia or Maryland, wherever the hell the Commanders are playing these days, and here to help us out with the previewing the 2022 command. That's going to take some getting used to, the Commanders thing. But Mr. Wu, how we doing, man?
Hey, pretty good. And I won't make you call me Mr. Wu. You can just give me you can just call me Brian.
Brian. All right, cool. That was your handle. That's the name of your show. So yeah. I was like, yeah, Mr. Wu. All right, cool.
Yeah.
My Raiders guy, is his name is your boy Q. So, you know, he allows me to call him Q, but his handle is your boy Q. So I,
very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So I was like, why not? You know, hey, it's what you want to call. I call you that. No problem. So, but welcome to the show. Thanks so much, for joining us. And, real quick tidbit, before we get started, as you know, your head coach, Ron Rivera, was a Chicago Bear, famously on the 85 team and played for the Bears several years. I've actually met him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. It was kind of a chance.
How was it?
It was a chance encounter. I wanted to freak out because there was an 85 Bear standing in front of me. Right. But it just so turns out that I was working at the time, when I was working as a ride attendant at Six Flags Great America in the Chicagoland area.
Oh, very nice.
He, his wife, and his son were coming on my ride, which was the Yankee Clipper. It's a flume ride, a water ride. I was the person that decided how many people, okay, you two in this boat, you two in that one, you know, that kind of thing. And I gave Ron Rivera and his wife their own boat. So,
very nice.
Ron Rivera, how about that? So nice to meet you. As it's, you know, 96 degrees in the middle of July here, you know, you stood in line. It's like, dude, if I'd have known you were out there, there's no way you're standing in line all this time. So, but anyway, yeah. So I got to meet him real quick and gave him his own boat, and he thanked me on the way out, which was cool. So, yeah. So there, I met Chico Rivera. It was pretty cool.
Anybody who I've talked to who's met Ron Rivera have all said really glowing, very nice things about him, that he's personable, he's nice, he's not arrogant or anything like that, just down to earth, you know, just a real person. So that fits with all the other stories I've heard about him, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, this was back in summer of 98, so I think it was even before he started coaching, or at least coaching at the NFL level. I don't know what he did before he started coaching with Lovey with the Bears, but was not the happiest guy in the world when we let Ron go, let him off to San Diego, and, you know, he's been on that journey ever since.
Absolutely.
You know, he was definitely one of my favorite assistants with during the Lovie Smith era. He was our DC in 06 when we went to the Super Bowl, so hated to see him go. But let's talk about your Commanders. First thoughts on the name, and also, because I'm a uniform snob, the uniforms. How are we feeling about the change?
So the name, you know, at the very beginning, you know, I wasn't necessarily a fan of it, but I was happy to have a name, right?
Right.
The football team is not a name. It's a designation. It is like, oh, hey, pasta, right? You know, it's not, it doesn't tell you who you are, or it doesn't give you an identity. So when we got Commanders, Commanders does sound a little cheesy. But it's a name. It's something that you can root for. It's something that you can get behind. So it's grown on me. I'm happy that we've got it now, as opposed to just football team. You know, everybody would always make the same dad joke. Hey, you're the football team. You know, that kind of got old after, 10 minutes. So good now with the Commanders. And I was very, very impressed with the uniforms. I was really – that was kind of my big thing. Okay, what are the uniforms going to look like? And the helmet is probably one of my favorite. It is a matte color with the W on the side and a stripe down the middle. And it just looks really, really cool. So I am digging these uniforms now. We've only seen them kind of on – you know, the players in like a promotional, you know, type photo shoot, right? There hasn't been any games or anything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Like that. So I'm excited to see what it looks like in game action. But from everything that we've seen, the uniforms, they look up to date. They look good. So I'm excited for that portion. I think when it came to the look of them, I think they knocked that out of the park, which we don't knock too many things out of the park here in DC, but I think the uniforms we did a good job on.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm a self-professed a uniform snob, and I was like the only correction I had for the helmet was I wish they would have stuck with the gold/yellow face mask. I'm not a fan of the red on red, but I love the simplicity of the logo, just the one yellow stripe, the matte coloring and things like that. I did like that. The uniforms were a mixed bag. I'm not a fan of the black ones. Not a fan of the black ones. It just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, I will say the black ones almost look kind of Steeler like.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm hoping when I see them on an actual player in a game, it'll look different. But that's probably my only knock on the uniforms is that black one does kind of look like Steelers, and I'm not a big Steelers person in general. So, I hope that changes when I actually see it in a game. But I think otherwise they're not too bad.
I have a sneaking suspicion that we might see that Week 6 on Thursday Night Football when the Bears and the – I keep wanting to call them the Skins for the – I'm 44. I've been calling them the Redskins the first 42 years
right,
of my life.
Yeah.
But
we're all struggling with it. It'll certainly take some time, absolutely.
When the Bears and the Commanders play on Thursday night, you know, Thursday night's, got that uniform written all over it, you know?
I think so. I think they're probably looking to release the black uniform for a primetime game. I want to say later in the season, Minnesota, Kirk Cousins will be coming back. I think that's a night game. I think that may be the blackout game that they're looking for. I think you're right, though. I think they're going to save that black one for a primetime type game. So Thursday night, that certainly could be a target for it as well.
All right. So real quick, before we dive into the 2021 recap here real quick, I like to ask the same three questions of our new guests. And those three questions are, where are you from? Where are you now? And your favorite moment as a fan of the Redskins football team / Commanders?
Yeah, so I am from, what we here in the Mid-Atlantic call the DMV. So that's the District of Columbia, Maryland, Virginia. In particular, I'm from Maryland area. Mm-hmm. Still in the Maryland area here as well. And I would probably say I wouldn't say it's my favorite memory, but it's one I remember the most and is, very meaningful. And why I say it's not my favorite is because it was the game after Sean Taylor's death. Sean Taylor, who, we had drafted and was ascending player to, what all of us fans thought was going to be, one of the better players of all time, his life was cut short. So that particular game after was pretty meaningful and memorable and something, I'll always remember. So sure. That's kind of like my first one that just really, really kind of stuck with me.
Sure. Yeah, it was a tragic thing that happened to him and the way that it happened, too. The guy
absolutely
was just protecting his house from, some scumbag who broke in and
exactly.
Shot in the leg. You don't really usually hear that's a fatal thing, but if you get hit in the right spot where that main artery is, that's
exactly
that tends to be all she wrote. So that was that was too bad when that happened. I remember the opening play, which I believe it was Joe Gibbs. It wasn't thrilled about, but they left his position open on the field, and the team you were playing got like a decent play out of it.
Yeah, yeah. So Greg Williams at the time, who was the defensive coordinator, went with just 10 guys on the field, you know, as a little bit of a tribute. And,
right.
You know, Greg Williams has always been kind of a I'm going to make my own rules and, you know, make my own decisions type of things. And I think he kind of kept that one to himself, as opposed to letting Gibbs know that he was going to do that. So they did do that to start that very first play. You know, I think everybody kind of appreciated it. But, yeah, I think I do remember that. I think they got a decent play out of it.
Right, because I think they ran right at the spot where Sean would have been. And that
ended. Exactly.
There was a giant hole right there, unfortunately. So
Right.
So let's talk about this 2021 season, because it was one of high hopes for you guys. And, you know, after 2020, it's like, granted, not the greatest record, you know, winning the division, but won the division nonetheless. And actually, in my opinion, on their playoff run, gave the Buccaneers their toughest contest of the playoffs, because they smoked right by the Saints in the second round, and they beat the Packers, thank God, in the NFC Championship game, and then made mincemeat of Kansas City in the Super Bowl. And the only team that really gave them a game was Washington in that wild card round.
Yeah. So coming off of that 2020 season, you know, there were certainly high hopes. The defense had played really well. And, just like you said, we gave the Buccaneers in that wild card game everything that they could handle. Now, you know, they still won with, you know, somewhat of a decent margin. So heading into 2021, I mean, the expectations were high, especially for our defensive line. We've got 4 first-round picks on the defensive line. That was expected to be the kind of heartbeat of the team, the strength of the team. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of went south right from game one. So, you know, one thing that, you know, most people don't know, you know, unless you're following the team, the Commanders did make a big push to trade for Matthew Stafford before that 2021 season. But obviously he went with the Rams, and, you know, our fallback plan, you know, and I don't know why this was the fallback plan, but it was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he lasted a quarter and hurt his hip. Gone, and immediately we were on the backup quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, undrafted free agent, you know, hero of that that playoff game the year before. So, you know, Taylor was a great story, you know, very nice guy, but he's an undrafted free agent quarterback, so he is limited physically. It showed throughout the course of the season in various games. He just didn't really kind of have the arm talent to make all the throws, so the offense was limited. And, you know, it was a really kind of underwhelming season with the offense being bad, the defense, which we thought was going to be carried by that defensive line, really wasn't. They struggled mightily. Chase Young got injured, ACL. Montez Sweat was in and out of the lineup with COVID, broken jaw, had some personal issues. He had a brother who passed away during the season. So, you know, a lot of kind of turmoil was happening with that defensive line. Jonathan Allen, our defensive tackle, he actually had an excellent year, made his first Pro Bowl, had 9 sacks. I mean, was just a dominant force on that defensive line. But really, the other guys kind of had a rough go of it. So, very underwhelming, and that kind of, you know, continued throughout the season. They did have a you know, a patch there where they were able to kind of turn it around and went on a 4-game winning streak to kind of you know, get themselves into playoff contention. Mm-hmm. But towards the end of the year, with COVID, guys missing time, the team had to sign a lot of, you know, guys off the street, off practice squads, and you know, having a schedule that puts 5 division games right at the end of the year, you know, Eagles, Cowboys, Giants. It was very much a gauntlet, and especially with the Cowboys and Eagles, who, you know, were vying for playoff, you know, seeding and things like that. Season got away very quickly from the Commanders, or yeah, the football team at that time, I should say.
Because, you know, the first 4 games, you lose a tight one to the Chargers in a game that I feel like you were winning until Fitzpatrick went down, or, you know, like Heinicke comes in and he's that one throw to McLaren. Where it's like, I remember like seeing memes all over the place, like this, the frame just before he catches the ball, there are like 3 defenders. He's got a space of about a quarter of an inch to get that ball in there. And then the meme was, he caught this. You know, it's like the frame just before is like, there's no way that's getting through. The defender's knocking it down. McLaren's falling to the ground. There's no way he's going to catch it. But somehow he does. It was like the one memorable moment from that game. But you fall just short, 20-16. Then you have the last minute come from behind win over the Giants on Thursday night. It's always fun to get that first Thursday night game
on
week two and everything. Then, lose to Buffalo on the road and then a win over the Falcons. And then from there on out, it's all in fours because you had four losses in a row after that. the Saints, the Chiefs, the Packers, and the Broncos. You have a bye week. And then you go on a four-game winning streak, including beating the defending world champions. And it was an impressive win as well. For a team in the Buccaneers who had pretty much looked like they were on their way back to at least another deep playoff run, that were having no problem whatsoever scoring points, the Commanders shut them down. You know, absolutely shut them down 29-19 to win that game. And everyone's like, okay, well, here's what we were looking for when we came into the season with this defensive performance.
Yeah, and I think that beating the Bucs this past season, I think really kind of showed, hey, the talent is here. For whatever reason, we're not seeing it on a consistent basis. We're not seeing it on a week-to-week basis. Is it because we just don't have the quarterback? Is it because the defense isn't necessarily playing together? But in that game, that was coming off a bye week before we played the Buccaneers, and Rivera had really gone to his defensive coordinator, Jack Del Rio, and offensive coordinator, Scott Turner, and said, hey, we need to get back to basics, essentially. We need to put, we got to stop the run. We got to put some more pressure on the quarterback on defense. And on offense, we've got a backup quarterback. We can't ask him to throw the ball 40 times a game. Run the football. And they kind of followed that mindset for the next four games, and it worked, and they were able to win. They were able to dominate, in that four game win streak. Washington was able to dominate time of possession. I mean, it was almost a 2-1 that they were controlling the ball, and keeping their defense off the field, which for a bad or underperforming defense, that was a really key thing to help that win those four games there. You really saw the ability, the potential that this team has, and it just kind of made you scratch your head like, well, why couldn't we get that all all season? Is it just because we needed the upgraded quarterback? Was there something else happening there? So yeah, great win against the Bucks, but unfortunately it was only the handful of times that we got to see that type of win.
Yeah, I mean, but with the win over Tampa, then you beat Carolina, you beat Seattle on Monday Night Football, and then go on the road to beat the Raiders. So in that four-game stretch, you beat two playoff teams, and you're 6-6 there, and everyone's thinking, okay, well, here comes Washington again. They did the same thing last year. They were 1-5 at one point and ended up going on this run at the end of the season to win a division and make a run at the playoffs. But then, like you mentioned before, this weird scheduling thing that the NFL did where they had five straight NFC East games to close out the year. Now, I've seen plenty of schedules where in the last eight games you'll see four or five division games, but they aren't all in a row at the end of the season. There's like, I know Goodell likes to finish out with like at least one or two division games at the end of the year, but five straight, including a four-game stretch here where it was Dallas, Philly, before you finished with the Giants at the end of the year. And, you had the four-game losing streak in the two matchups apiece to Dallas and Philly, and then were able to beat up on a Giants team that was literally phoning it in that last week of the season.
Yeah. That Giants team, they called, I can't remember, it was a two kneel downs on third down and second down. I mean, it was
their own 5-yard line, too.
Yeah, it was bad. And especially, their head coach who had, tried to make fun of the football team, of the Commanders during the week at his press conference. For them to put out that output, I thought was comical and fitting for how the Giants ended their season. But, you know, back to the Commanders, to the football team, that was a rough stretch to end the year. So, I mean, by that point, we had Chase Young and Montez Sweat, our two big athletic, fast defensive ends, were gone. And the defense really, you know, at that point had been ravaged by COVID. So, I mean, all of our starters were in and out of the lineup. We were going through, guys who were on practice squads, guys who were just, you know, out on the street that we were signing. One of those games, we started Garrett Gilbert at quarterback because Heinicke got COVID and he was out. So we got a guy, Garrett Gilbert, who was off New England's practice squad, and he started a game. And for whatever reason, we made him throw the ball 30 times, and the Eagles, you know, blew us out that game. So wow. It was pretty rough down the stretch there. So any hopes they had of trying to make a run at a playoff kind of all evaporated with that that last 5-game stretch there.
So we get to the off season and the big move for the Commanders after failing to get their hands on Stafford in 2021 and settling for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Not a bad settle. Not as bad as what the Bears did, which was we had this awesome flirtation with Russell Wilson and then signed Andy Dalton. Oh boy. So right off the heels of hearing that deal, it wasn't going to happen. We signed Andy Dalton, and the social media team for the Bears posts QB1 with Dalton in a Bear uniform. Oh boy. Yeah. That happened. That actually happened.
I can only imagine that.
Yeah. And no excitement around that move, no excitement around the team period until draft day when we traded up for Justin Fields. Then it was like, oh, this might be fun. And it wasn't. It really wasn't.
I got to tell you, I am a big Justin Fields fan. I watched him at Georgia to Ohio State. I think he's an excellent player. And honestly, I know you're gonna talk about our quarterback here in a second.
Sure.
Going into this offseason, I was like, give the Bears 3 first-round picks because I'll take Justin Fields. I know you guys had a new coach, new GM,
right?
You know, coming in. I was like, you know, they don't want to be tied to somebody else. Like, come on, give him to us because we had considered the year prior trying to move up to get Justin Fields, but Rivera thought the asking price was too much, so he did not make the move. And you guys did, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I'm all in on Justin Fields. I think he's going to have a sneaky good year this year for you guys.
You know, it's encouraging because this is the ninth of these opponent previews that I've done so far. And I say at least 7 of my guests have told me how much they like Justin Fields. And trust me, I've been doing these shows since 2015. That's never been a thing with the Chicago Bear quarterback before. So hearing they're like, man, I can't wait to see what he does year two. I can't, you know, I like Justin Fields, a huge fan in college. This is a conversation that doesn't happen to a Bears fan. It doesn't. So it's been really encouraging to hear that from people who aren't Bear fans. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to playing the Bears so I can see him, either in person or up close and watch him for a game and things like that. So it's really encouraging. And I hope that this new offensive coordinator of ours is better than Nagy. I mean, it would be hard not to be, but I'm hoping that he is so we can really do something special with this kid.
I think he's going to have a good year. Hopefully he has a good year, except when we play them. But, I'm really rooting for him to do well.
That's the other sentiment that gets shared with me. Like, I can't wait to see him play, but I hope he dies like a dog when he plays us. But
right, exactly.
Otherwise, I hope he has a great 16-game schedule aside from the 17th where he's playing us. So that's the other sentiment I keep getting with that. But when it comes down to it, the Commanders trade, they swap second-rounders. They trade a 2022 third-round pick and a conditional third in 2023 to take Carson Wentz off of the Colts' hands. Now, is this something – I mean, were you happy about this when it happened? Is it something you've warmed up to or as it has been in my situation with the Bears from time to time, something you just ended up accepting over time?
Yeah, I think it may be that I'm accepting it over time. But so initially they made the trade. I was not happy. You know, for me, my kind of philosophy and the way I see, you know, kind of building a football team, you look at most of these teams who have long-term success, they draft a rookie quarterback, they develop him, they build around him, and, you know, they win for, you know, 8 to 10 years or 5 to 6 years, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, very rarely do you get the, oh, hey, Tom Brady's going to sign with the Bucs in free agency, or Peyton Manning's going to go to the Broncos, and you get a Super Bowl or two out of it. You know, that's really rare. So I really wanted them to focus on the draft a quarterback, build around them, do it the right way, and, you know, build a team that can be competitive year in, year out, as opposed to going the stopgap route of, hey, let's get a retread quarterback, a retread veteran, a journeyman, and doing it that way. So I wasn't necessarily excited about the Wentz trade when it first happened. But, you know, sitting back, looking at it, realizing Carson Wentz is an absolute upgrade over Taylor Heinicke. There's sure, just no two ways about it. Carson Wentz is a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL. Now, we can certainly have the discussion of where you want to rank him. Is he in the middle? Is he closer to the bottom? Sure, that's all fair and up for discussion, but he is absolutely better than anybody that we had on the roster. And he does possess a big arm. He is pretty athletic, can escape pressure. And those are things that, you know, we really didn't have in this offense. I mean, Heinicke's arm was very limited. I mean, you mentioned that Terry McLaurin catch in that first game, but that was really kind of a microcosm of our offense. Terry ran his full route. He was actually open. He had to stop and come back and contort his body to make that crazy catch against the Chargers, but it was only because Taylor Heinicke's arm was pretty weak and he was often late on his throws. So, you know, we needed somebody who could kind of take that offense to the next level and, you know, hopefully potentially take some of the pressure off the defense having to be out there so much. And I think those are some things that Carson Wentz can do. Is he a cure-all? Is he a fix-all? No, absolutely not. I don't believe he's, you know, that player that we saw in 2017 where he can essentially kind of carry a team. He can make up for other flaws in your team. I don't think he's there. He certainly can win you a couple games here or there, but he's not a guy that you can go out there and say, okay, let's just put it on his shoulders, you know, throw it 50 times every game, and he'll lead us to the promised land. You know, we definitely have got to put weapons around him. The defense really needs to improve. But certainly, you know, he is a better option than what we've had. And, yeah, I've warmed up to it. You know, I think some people, you know, some in the fan base think he, you know, is going to be a cure-all and lead us to NFC Championship. I hope that would be so great. But I think, you know, at the very least, he'll give us a much better chance to compete week in, week out.
Yeah, looking at it glass half full, it's definitely an upgrade from what you had last year, especially after Fitzpatrick went down.
Yeah.
The potential for him to, I mean, he's still a younger guy, so the potential for him to return to 2017 form is there.
Yeah.
And just having the right weapons around him, you know, McLaurin, you know, your new first-round pick, and Dotson definitely helping in that regard. And then if the defense can help level things out on the other side, keep games close, then you got the skeleton for a good team there, and the potential for Wentz to probably be the catalyst to push this offense to heights that it couldn't reach in 2021.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, with our draft that we just had, you could definitely tell there was a concerted effort to give Carson Wentz weapons and to help the offense a lot more. You know, previously we'd kind of been that defense focused. I mentioned the four first round picks on that defensive line. You know, the first round pick was a wide receiver. You know, the third round pick was a running back. A fifth round pick was a tight end. So there were certainly efforts made to give Carson more options, more weapons. That way he has the ability to utilize that big arm and that quick release that he has.
So before we dive a little bit further into the draft there, the free agency period looked like it was more about letting guys go than it was about bringing guys yeah. in. You know, you sign Andrew Norwell away from Jacksonville. That's turned out to be like more of a trade because Brandon Scherff goes to Jacksonville yeah. in free agency. You sign Andrew Norwell in response. You sign Trey Turner, another guard, away from the Steelers. You re-sign J.D. McKissic. You re-sign Cornelius Lucas, which, all due respect, got a big laugh from Bear fans. That guy was a disaster in Chicago. But I guess it's kind of like him and Charles Leno. They found, you know, greener pastures in Washington. that they couldn't find in Chicago, because that's worked out great for you guys. But, you know, Tim Settle's off to Buffalo. Matthew Iadonis is
nitis. He went to Carolina.
Yeah, he went to Carolina.
Yep.
You mentioned when we were talking before we started recording, Kyle Allen, your other backup, goes to Houston. And Ricky Seals-Jones stays in division, goes to the Giants. So, I mean, was there no cap space to make moves, or is Washington just not the destination it used to be as far as that goes?
Well, it's kind of a combination. So certainly it's not the destination that it used to be. But more so, it's about the approach that Rivera. So Rivera here isn't just a head coach. He is head football decision maker, front office, and head coach. And he's chosen or opted to go with the kind of limited free agency approach, more heavily focused on the draft and getting players that he's comfortable with. So former Carolina Panthers players that he's coached is kind of the trend that he's brought in here recently. And then also, too, the team is in the middle of a big contract negotiation with Terry McLaurin, which is going to cost a lot of money.
Right.
So, you know, we've had the reports here that the team has kind of been earmarking funds for that extension or contract. And so I think a lot of it also has to do with that, right? The ability to kind of go out and sign a big name, you know, kind of limits them with what they want to do in regards to that Terry McLaurin contract. And also, when they traded for Carson Wentz, that was a, you know, quarterbacks make a lot of money, and his cap number certainly filled up a lot of space, because you go from Fitzpatrick and Heineke to all of a sudden Carson Wentz salary. You know, there's a big difference in those two salaries right there. So, you know, it was a combination of things. Certainly, we're not the destination that we used to be. Rivera's approach of kind of slow playing free agency, just kind of focusing on homegrown talent versus, you know, getting spending a bunch of money in free agency. And Terry's contract certainly kind of played into that role. But I think you mentioned it. The two smart ones that I, you know, signings that I thought. Andrew Norwell, he is a starting guard, a little bit older, but he is a high-level guard who can who's pretty durable and will give you 17 games. Trey Turner, same thing. Both those guys played under Ron Rivera in Carolina. Both of them played under our offensive line coach, John Matsko, also in Carolina. Both were former Pro Bowlers in the system. So I expect them, you know, to come in and contribute right away. And you know, really, these past 2 years, we thought the defensive line here in Washington would have been the strength. It's really been our offensive line. They have really done wonders. They've opened up a lot of holes in the run game. They've kept some of these quarterbacks we've had, some of these mediocre quarterbacks we've had, you know, up off the mat, you know, a lot, and have performed very, very well. So, yeah, free agency, not much to speak of, but certainly there were a couple of gems in there.
Yeah. How old are you, by the way?
39 years old.
So not really old. I mean, do you remember the 91 team?
I do. I do remember the 91 team. And
one of my favorites of all time, the 91 squad.
Well, I think it's one of the better football teams. I mean, that team also had like four shutouts or something like that. I mean, they were just an exceptional football team all the way around. But something here in the DC area that, you know, all fans, you know, kind of relate to or kind of take pride in, we've always had pretty good offensive lines. We've had some really good
Hogs.
Yeah, we've had some good offensive line coaches as well. You know, Joe Bugle, then to Bill Callahan, now to John Matsko. And here recently, John Matsko has really, made a lot of these guys, some of these lesser offensive linemen, into really, you know, high performing unit, and they've really done a nice job these past two seasons. So, you know, for me, I'm a big offensive line play person in general. So, any offensive lineman, I'm always going to talk about them more before I talk about a wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm a former old lineman myself, so yeah, I've definitely got a sentimental attachment to the big guys up front. And everything. So, but yeah, I mean, like I said, 91 was right in my wheelhouse. I was 13 in 91. So that was pretty pivotal year in life. And, you know, 91 was a fun year in the NFL. That was the year the Falcons were doing, you know, had MC Hammer on the sidelines, and they out of nowhere win the division and things like that. And then the Redskins are one of the more complete teams we've had in the last 30 years or so. I mean, top to bottom, defense was awesome. Mark Rippon was magic that year and throwing the football all over the place to Gary Clark and Art Monk and all those guys. And it was just a really fun team to watch. And 91, they beat the crap out of us. You know, the Bears started that year 4-0, and then we played the two Super Bowl teams back to back and got our asses handed to us. It's like, well, I think we've just been shown where we rank in this whole thing, as we were, you know, kicking ass 4-0. Then we played the Bills 1 week, and then the Redskins right behind it, and one loss was worse than the one before it. So I was like, oh boy. And you know, Redskins 14-2, just went on a tear. Won the NFC title game like 56-10 or something crazy like that. So
certainly one of the more dominant teams that we've seen, and probably one of the more forgotten. I think whenever anybody looks at Super Bowl champs, they often get missed that 91 team. But they were very, very dominant on both sides of the ball, like you said,
because it came on the heels of, like, after 91, then the Cowboys dynasty. Yeah, right on the heel. 92, 93, 95, those three Super Bowl wins in 4 years went a long way in kind of erasing the greatness of that 91 squad. So it was unfortunate that it went down that way. So, all right, so we touched upon it before. Let's talk about the draft. So going into it, was Dotson like a top choice as far as fans? I know that he was getting mocked to Washington quite a bit, or at least a wide receiver was, because no one really knew what order those receivers were going to go in. In the draft. And but, you know, 16 comes around. Here comes the Redskins. I still do it all the time. Well, like, just like I keep calling the Chargers San Diego. I still say San Diego's when I refer to the Chargers.
I do the San Diego one multiple times. Yeah. No worries.
It's been like 5-6 years I still call them San Diego. So, but anyway, here comes Washington. They're on the board. You traded down, right, to get to 16?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So heading into the draft, really, you know, the consensus was we need a weapon, right? We need more offensive firepower besides Terry McLaurin, and we need to get Wentz, right? You know, hey, Wentz is going to be our quarterback, then go all in, get Wentz another weapon. So wide receiver was pretty much every, you know, that had been the reporting that we were going to target. So everybody was kind of on the same page. Now, which guy was it going to be? Garrett Wilson out of Ohio State, Drake London, USC, Chris Olave, another Ohio State guy. Those were kind of the three names kind of being mentioned to us. Now, by the time we got to our pick, those two guys were gone. Chris Olave was there, but the team, we didn't have, we only had a few draft picks in general. So they traded back so they could pick up an extra pick, and they went with Jahan Dotson. Now, really here locally, there hadn't been any kind of reporting about Jahan Dotson that the team was really high on him. They had like one meeting with him, but they had multiple meetings with the USC wide receiver and the Ohio State wide receiver. So, you know, the thought was it was going to be one of those Ohio State guys or Drake London from USC. And it turned out to be neither of them. It turned out to be Jahan Dotson. But I think, you know, it may have been a blessing in disguise, you know, where those guys, you know, I hear a lot of upside talk with those guys. Jahan Dotson's more of a complete ready-to-perform guy now. He is very polished in his route running, and he has excellent hands, as we've seen, you know, over these OTAs and mini camps. Obviously, you know, not any pads, not any live fire just happening yet, but it's been evident his route running and his hands and kind of the timing and rapport he's started to get here with Wentz. So that's been great to see. And then, you know, kind of a curveball. We get this second round pick that we picked up, by trading back, and we draft a defensive tackle, Fidarian Mathis from Alabama, to go with the other two Alabama defensive tackles we already have on the roster with Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne. Well, and a lot of it, you mentioned it earlier, you know, Tim Settle, we chose not to re-sign him. He goes up to Buffalo to play on that really good defensive line. Matt Ioannidis, I think, moves on to Carolina. So we all of a sudden went to having a lot of defensive tackles to just two. So we got Fidarian Mathis, who is more of a space eater. He's a guy who's going to hold his own in the run game and doesn't give you too much bio pass rush, but you know, isn't going to be moved off of his spot. So he now comes in with the ability to be a rotational DT, but he can also start as well too, because again, they kind of focused on a little bit older guys, more juniors, more seniors, guys who had a lot of starts, a lot of playing experience. You know, I think they're really trying to make this third year under Ron Rivera a successful year, a playoff year. And they want guys to hit the ground running. You know, they don't want guys who are, hey, they may have immense talent, but they may need 2-3 years to develop. They kind of shied away from that this particular draft. Third round, we end up going Brian Robinson Jr., another Alabama football player, running back. And he was actually kind of my favorite back. I had tweeted about him earlier in the year, like in February. I was like, you know, this may be a guy that the Commanders take, because you know, Ron Rivera is very much a creature of habit, and he's, you know, kind of trying to model this team after his 15-1 team that he had in Carolina that went to the Super Bowl with Cam Newton. And in that year, he had two running backs. He had D'Angelo Williams and he had Jonathan Stewart. Jonathan Stewart kind of was that in between the tackles pounder, you know, had really good vision. And that's kind of what I saw in Brian Robinson, the running back from Alabama. And, you know, lo and behold, after we draft him, Ron Rivera makes that same kind of, you know, comparison between him and Jonathan Stewart and his Carolina days as well, too. So I think they're going to use him between the tackles. Gibson will be out in space more, maybe catch some more passes, screen passes, those types of things where he can use that explosiveness he has a little bit more as opposed to between the tackles, and let Brian Robinson do that. And then from there, you know, we continued to get some guys, Percy Butler, free safety from Louisiana, Cole Turner, tight end, Nevada. We got a guard, Chris Paul from Tulsa, and then a defensive back, Christian Holmes from Oklahoma State, who actually has a, you know, good, you know, chance to stick on the team and play a lot. Our secondary is pretty thin right now. We've got a couple of guys, but and in terms of cornerback, we really have the two starters, and then it's kind of wide open from there. So I know he's turned some heads with his play in the slot here over the mini camp and OTAs here recently. But yeah, big focus for the draft for Rivera and his team were some older players, guys who are you know, may not necessarily have a high upside, but they've got a very high floor who are ready to play and compete now and contribute now. Really kind of was their focus.
So Sam Howell, will he be kind of like, I mean, you alluded to the fact that they kind of tried to stay away from projects, but you took a flyer on him in the fifth round and, you know, to the quarterback from North Carolina, had a great college career and a not so great year for quarterbacks that, you know, the good ones started falling. And, you know, Pickett go in the first round, and then we didn't have another one until the third round. They finally go, and then they start coming off the board in like the fourth, fifth round. I mean, I would see that, you know, Howell with Wentz in tow, this could be the guy that could possibly replace him in 3 years. Is that the optimistic view?
Yeah. So, you know, I think you mentioned it, you know, Sam Howell, you know, kind of at the beginning of the draft process was one of the top guys in the draft process. There was a time where he was, you know, considered, you know, maybe the number one quarterback prospect. And then through the process, some other guys rose, he kind of fell. But he absolutely has, you know, the physical traits that you need in a quarterback, the arm, the quick release, the mobility, all of those things he has, and the, you know, playing experience, right? He started 3 years at North Carolina, won a lot of games for them starting, you know, from his freshman year. So, you know, he comes in with a lot of tools, and, you know, Rivera, you know, was very careful to not draft a quarterback too close to Wentz, right? I don't think anybody wanted a repeat of the Wentz-Jalen Hurts kind of saga or issues with Carson Wentz. You know, he wanted to make Carson feel, hey, you're the guy, you know, we need to get another quarterback. quarterback on the roster, but you know, it's your show, nobody else's. So the fact that he fell to the fifth round was, you know, was definitely surprising to me, and I'm sure to other Washington fans. But yeah, I think you know, he is certainly a guy who has all the tools and can be that, you know, whether it's a long term backup or if he, you know, if we all think that he can develop into a long term starter, because Heinicke, this is his last year on his deal, and I imagine, you know, that we just drafted Hal, that Howell would kind of fill that Heinicke role moving forward past this year. I don't foresee them re-signing Heinicke unless, you know, something crazy kind of happens. But it's funny, on our podcast, we had actually interviewed Sam Howell's offensive coordinator in February of this year, offensive coordinator, Coach Phil Longo, and he you know, kind of painted us a picture of Sam that, you know, I was like, well, this guy's got to go, you know, first round, second round. And it was very, very amazing or very kind of shocking that he fell as far as he did.
Yeah, I think that was the case with a lot of these quarterbacks. Like when, you know, the first one didn't come off the board until 20, when there was talk that, you know, who was picking at two? Somebody might take Malik Willis at number two overall, and he didn't go until late in the third round.
Yeah,
when Tennessee finally snatched him up. I mean, I knew it wasn't the best year for quarterbacks, and everyone was just wondering if somebody was going to get desperate and take one high because they needed one. And you know, you saw a lot of cool resolve from teams this year, as far as like going and getting their quarterback, and we need one, so we got to go get one. Let's pay a fortune for this guy when we can probably get him in the third round, fourth round, or whatever. Everybody played it cool, and these quarterbacks started falling. And it was like one of the big stories of the draft is, like, we know it wasn't, you know, like 2021 where five guys went in the first 15 picks. But, you know, you don't usually see the quarterbacks wait until the third round to start coming off the board.
Yeah, it was very odd, but I had been, you know, thinking about that, and you know, I think this is, you know, kind of the NFL showing us how they view and evaluate quarterbacks versus, like, you know, the media scouts or the social media scouts and how they view quarterbacks. Because, right, if you watch any of the media coverage, Malik Willis was and should have been the number one overall pick, and it was almost a consensus. And the NFL very clearly told you no, that he is not a number one overall pick, and that he was, you know, just barely a third rounder is kind of how they viewed him. Now, will that turn out to be right? You know, who knows? Malik Willis could turn out to be a Hall of Fame player, but it's just that kind of difference in how the you know, the media views, you know, scouting these players versus how the NFL actually, you know, scouted these players. You know, it was interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I found interesting over the last 10 years or so, if not more, about how the running back position is treated in the draft these days. You know, you don't see too many more, you know, right, like, you know, we're pretty close in age growing up. We saw a lot of guys, Kajana Carter and guys like that, drafted number one overall, number five overall.
First round, yeah.
You know, yeah, 2005, the Bears took Cedric Benson at number four, and, you know, what a disaster that turned out to be. But, you know, but that was something that you saw all the time. If you had this dynamic running back in college, then he was going to be a first-round pick and probably a high first-round pick. The position itself hasn't been devalued. It's still a very important aspect of the NFL game, but I think NFL GMs and scouting departments have all realized you can find super talented guys day two, day three, and you know, you can come in and get this guy on the cheap for 4 years, and then you move on to the next one. And the Bears, that's something that served the Bears very well. I mean, our current running back's a late third round pick. The running back before him was a fifth rounder. Tariq Cohen was a fourth rounder, you know, and things like that. That's something that you see. The position itself isn't devalued, but how much you're willing to go and pay for it in the draft has been devalued significantly.
I think you nailed it right there. You have to have a good running back. You have to have a versatile running back, and you have to have probably a couple of them, right? You got two, maybe, you know, most likely three of them on your roster. It's just a matter of, you know, the need versus, you know, what else you have on the team. And I think really the need of having a great quarterback skyrocketed so much that, you know, it pushed the value of, you know, some of these other players down, in particular that running back position. But you're exactly right. You need productive guys at the running back spot, and I think you said third round for a couple of your guys. We've got a couple of guys who are third round: Antonio Gibson, Brian Robinson Jr., who we just got now. I mean, mm-hmm. I think you see teams, that's kind of their sweet spot, right? That third, fourth round to get really, really productive running backs.
Yeah, and we just drafted a guy last year in the sixth round, Khalil Herbert, that was a solid starter for us.
He was a guy I actually wanted us to draft that year as well. I was like, man, he's really good. And then I saw, I want to say it was, I don't remember what game it was last year, but he had like 100 yards rushing, and I was like, I knew it. I knew the Commanders.
He had a 100-yard game against the Packers.
Yes,
that was like his first game starting, and you know, he had 100 yards rushing against Green Bay. It's like, I think we got something on our hands.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that, and I was like, I knew it. We should have gotten him. So that was that's a great pickup by you guys right there.
So yeah, one last gift from Ryan Pace on his way out as general manager. So we move on to 2022. Let's take a look at the schedule here, and at first glance, you do not have five straight division games to close out the year, so that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, thankfully that, you know, the schedule. So we played, I want to say it was like either the first or it was certainly top five hardest schedule last year. I mean, the quarterbacks that we faced, they were all top-level quarterbacks, and they beat us up pretty bad last season. So I think we've got one of the easier schedules this year, and no five-game division game gauntlet to end the season. So hopefully with Carson Wentz coming in here, some additional excitement, some more weapons, you know, maybe we can take advantage of a little bit softer schedule and, you know, start the season out on a winning note and, you know, kind of go from there.
Yeah, and the schedule is a bit more favorable for you guys this year. NFC North, AFC South, not two of the strongest divisions that we have in the league right now, unfortunately. I mean, it's top heavy.
Yeah.
You know, Tennessee in the South, you got Green Bay in the North, and then six decent winnable games after that for pretty much anybody. You start with Jacksonville at home, you're on the road at Detroit, and then back-to-back division games, so that automatically eliminates a five-game gauntlet at the end of the year with Philly at home, Dallas on the road to start the first four games. Then you're home for Tennessee, and then on the road on Thursday night, you come to Soldier Field and play the Bears.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that'll be a very, very big game to see how Carson does in a primetime game for the Commanders. The Commanders haven't been very good in primetime recently. We've been better with Ron Rivera, you know, in 2020 and 2021. But, you know, prior to that, we've been awful in primetime games. So hopefully with Carson, some additional weapons, you know, we can put up a good showing against you guys that Thursday night.
Then we're home for Green Bay, at Indianapolis, home for Minnesota, at Philly on Monday night. So it looks like schedule-wise, the league is spreading out the division games all the way across the schedule, as opposed to lumping them at the end like they did last year. So
I think they may have learned from previous year and taken a look at kind of how that ended up and said to themselves, okay, maybe we can do a little bit better scheduling and spread these games out and not just throw them in at the end. Much better schedule, much for what it is, it's a little bit easier than last year's schedule. So hopefully that plays well for the Commanders and they're able to put a little bit better performance out there.
Yeah, and of course, the thing that I always like to mention is that we're looking at this through the lens of the 2021 season. Like, based on last year, this looks like to be one of the more balanced schedules for you guys as far as spreading out your division games instead of literally having them all at once. And also, you know, like I said, the AFC South, the NFC North, top-heavy divisions, winnable games on the back end. And then in the NFC East, the carousel that you guys have in that division, you take turns winning it. Nobody wins it 2 years in a row. You never know. Somebody could catch heat, and the next thing you know, it's the Commanders division again. Or maybe this year it'll be the Eagles or the Giants come from out of nowhere. I mean, it happens every single year in the East. It's not like the NFC North where it's the Packers, and then maybe once in a while the Bears or the Vikings will win it, you know, on a lark kind of thing. It's very much a carousel that takes place in the NFC East. So it's anybody's division pretty much year in and year out.
Yeah, I believe it's like the last 17 years or something like that I saw. It's been a different, you know, NFC East champion. So, yeah, nothing is guaranteed. As well as the Cowboys did last year, it's not guaranteed that they'll win the division this year. The Eagles are certainly making a big push. Obviously, we, the Commanders, are doing the same as well. And then, you know, the Giants, for however, you know, rough a season they had, could easily bounce back with some of the draft picks that they made here and maybe a big year out of Daniel Jones. So yeah, things can go any direction in the NFC East.
One little scheduling quirk with the NFL threw you guys a nice little curveball was the essentially back-to-back games with the Giants that you have, because you have a week 13 you're at the Giants, week 14 you're on a bye, just like the Bears also have the late week 14 bye, and then you come right back at home against the Giants again. So you got the Giants, a bye, and then the Giants again. Just to make things interesting, I guess, and to give you those back-to-back divisional games that I know that you Commanders fans are yearning for after the way last year finished out.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, you know, we did pretty well against the Giants last year, so hopefully that continues. But yeah, it is a little odd to have the Giants and then have a bye and then have the Giants again. But, you know, I think from the Commander standpoint, right, well, we have that bye, and then the Giants have to come to FedEx Field. Mm-hmm. That first Giants matchup, we go to New York. So we'll be rested before we have to go cross-country and play the 49ers. So, yeah. You know, typically those cross-country trips don't do well for the traveling team. So hopefully that helps us out, that we'll have been at home the past the prior 2 weeks, and that in preparation for that San Fran game.
And then to finish out your home, you got back-to-back home games, home for Cleveland, home for Dallas to close out the year. I like this schedule for you guys, as opposed to the nightmare that I just saw in 2021. Yeah. I did not know that was happening in 2021. I'm sure I would have mentioned that had I seen that, but, you know, five division games in a row to finish out. I mean, I, as a Bear fan, I'd have been pissed if it was Green Bay, Minnesota, Green Bay, Minnesota, and then we finish with Detroit. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, I was like, seriously, what are we trying to do here?
Yeah, I mean, there had been seasons where there was like three division games, you know, to end the year, but five, the way they had it set up there, I mean, when we looked at it, it was just kind of like, Is this a mistake? Did they, you know, how did they come to that conclusion? But I'm glad to see they corrected that this year. We've got a little bit more even schedule in terms of where some of these are, or when we play some of these teams. But yeah, to end the year against Cleveland, you know, is Deshaun going to play? We don't know yet. And then Dallas is a rivalry game for us, so that'll always be a big week here in the DMV.
You know, as much as, you know, I, a child of the 80s, would love to see the Browns return to the form that I grew up watching them in, those two classic AFC championship games they had with the Broncos there. Yep. In the 80s. I hope Deshaun Watson doesn't ever play a down of football for them.
Yeah.
You know, I really hope they have to eat that trade like the dummies that they were for making that trade and before any of this was resolved.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's disgusting what he's alleged to have done. And, you know, with all those people, women, I should say, coming out of the woodwork, some of it is true.
He may not be
guilty with all of them, but he's definitely racked up a few. That's for sure.
Yeah, with each story, the more heinous than the next, it is, you know, just kind of, you have to sit back and say, Browns, what were you doing? You know, you couldn't let the process play out, then make a determination. You had to go and make this move, fully guaranteed $230 million, you know, before just anything, you know. So
Well, here's the thing with Deshaun Watson, and we're kind of, you know, getting off the trail here, but we're with Watson. Number one, I was not surprised that somebody would trade for him. I was floored that Casario, the GM for Houston, got the asking price that he basically stuck to the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot believe somebody came to the table with three first-rounders and, you know, and the slew of second and third-day picks that they ended up giving up for him. And then, of course, you mortgage your salary cap future by giving him $46 million a year guaranteed on top of it. Like, I just... I was absolutely floored that whole thing went down the way it did.
I can tell you, I wasn't even so much surprised that the Texans got what they were asking for, like that high of an asking price, because, you know, the Commanders here, we just traded for Carson Wentz, and there was nobody actually trading for Carson Wentz. There was nobody else in on that market, as some of the reporting has told us. So much so that the owner of the Colts, you know, was not really happy with Carson, and they were really kind of seconds away from just flat out releasing him, you know, right. So we essentially bid against ourselves. So, you know, there's always going to be a desperate NFL team who says, you know what, take all of these draft picks, take all of these players, you know, whatever, you know, to satisfy, you know, their quest for a quarterback. So not surprised that, you know, a big price tag was given up and paid to for a quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, I get that that's the asking price for a franchise quarterback, especially one who's still got the prime of his career ahead of him,
right?
And everything. But his particular situation, I mean, not only did they give up a king's ransom worth of picks, they also signed him to an unprecedented contract on top of it. And, you know, if there's any justice in this world, he probably won't play for the first 2 years of it, you know, kind of thing. So...
Absolutely,
I would not be upset if that's what ended up happening to the Browns. Like I said, I'm one of those guys that I root for the underdog, and I would love to see the Browns be the Browns that I grew up watching again someday. But they get what they deserve, and however this thing turns out. So
yeah, no, we'll see here in the coming days how that ends up for those guys.
So back to your squad, who did not trade for a less than reputable guy. And you know, what are you looking at? Because like we just mentioned before, you know, the carousel that happens with the teams that win the division in the East, you have a more manageable schedule than before. Not only in the fact that they didn't lump you with five division games at the end of it, you know, the five most important games you got, you put them at the end of the season there, so there's no margin for error. But you also have, you know, winnable games in the divisions that you end up playing this year. What are you looking at as far as you know, your range wins losses for the squad this year?
Yeah, so this is year three under Ron Rivera here, and you know, he's come in here and said, you know, hey, it takes 5 years to turn around a culture, and that may have been true, you know, 10 years ago, but we've seen rebuilds happen much faster, much quicker in the NFL. You know, right in front of our eyes, right? It doesn't take 5 years for a team to be a consistent winner. So Ron needs to win now. We were 7-9 in his first year in 2020. We were 7-10 last year in 2021. Seven wins, that's just not good enough. The talent is there. Is it talent that can get you an NFC Championship game, Super Bowl? No, you know, we're still a ways from that, but we should have a winning record. You know, being able to be above 500, you know, win the division, maybe potentially win a playoff game, those aren't unreasonable expectations for this team and for the quarterback that we do have in place now, which is Carson Wentz. Like, he's capable of that. So for me, you know, anything from, you know, 9 to 11 wins is where we should be. You know, knowing some of the crazy things that happens with our team, you know, we may be 7-10 again. So, you know, on the floor of it, you know, we're probably on that 7-10. If things kind of break our way, you know, 9, 10, 11 wins, I think is very reasonable for this team. Because essentially, you know, I think we talked about it this whole time here. You know, this NFC East is very up and down and changes rapidly. So there's no one team that, you know, we can't compete against.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of like the real wild card in this whole thing. You know, we look at the schedule and how it turns out, the games that you, that, you know, the opponent that you have. You don't have the toughest schedule in the NFL like you did a year ago and things like that. And then the fact that, you know, every year somebody new in that division just seems to turn it on. I think it was like the Eagles in 03 and 04 that were the last team to win back-to-back divisions in the NFC East. So, I mean, it's been a long time since somebody did it twice in a row. You know, maybe the Cowboys are in a spot to do it again this year, but also at the same time, nobody would be surprised if it didn't go down that way.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. It's those Andy Reid Eagles back a while ago that were the last to do it. So could it be Dallas? They're certainly in a good position, right, coming off a 12-win season. But we've seen them come off 12-win seasons with 8-8 seasons. It certainly is anybody's game here in this particular division. And, you know, the Commanders, you know, myself included, are hoping that that it's our turn.
Amen to that. So, well, Brian, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for helping us out with previewing these Redskins football team, Commanders team, whatever you guys are. Well, you know, that's what we'll call you when we play week number 6. We look forward to having you back on to preview the matchup when we get ready for that week 6 Thursday nighter. And where can we keep up with you in the meantime?
Yeah, so you can catch me on Twitter at Mr. Who with 2 O's, 1. And then our podcast is Commanders Declassified Podcast. We're available on all the audio platforms. Our YouTube channel is Washington Football Team Declassified Podcast. We have a website too where we put up articles and different interviews that we do throughout the year as well too. So thank you for reaching out. Thank you for having me on your show. And you know, I really do hope that Justin Fields has a big year. Hopefully you guys get another receiver or have somebody who can help him out.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think 2023 will be the year for that to happen because Ryan Pace left the cupboard pretty bare going into the offseason. We're light on cap space and we only had 5 draft picks going into the offseason. Somehow Ryan Poles turned that into 11 picks.
Oh wow.
Did some finagling with day 3 and ended up with like 8 picks on day 3.
Which, that's impressive.
How the hell did he do that? But
yeah,
he managed that. So we ended up with quantity, and hopefully we get some quality out of that. But we've also got a full slate of picks, and depending on who you talk to, anywhere from 80 to 120 million in cap space next season. So So if DK Metcalf is still disgruntled at the end of the year, and the Seahawks haven't traded him someplace, maybe we can bring him back home to Chicago because his dad played for the Bears and that's where he was born.
So, then that looks like a perfect matchup right there if I see it.
So, and hopefully the Commanders, for your sake, won't get crazy and frustrated with McLaren and trade him away.
No, if that happens, there are going to be a lot of upset people here in Washington.
Be blood in the streets.
Oh, it would. I mean, he is a favorite here. Him, Jonathan Allen, Chase, those guys are favorites here. So hopefully, you know, Rivera said he's not trading him, so hopefully that is still true.
Right. Well, Brian, thanks again for coming back on. We look forward to talking to you prior to week 6 and what will be a tight week for us both, wrapping up the week before and getting ready for the week ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, man. Take care.
As always, want to thank my guest, Brian / Mr. Who, for joining us on the show. Look forward to talking to him. That'll be an interesting week for us because, you know, we have that Thursday night game against the Commanders. And that's where, you try to put a week's worth of shows into the 3 days between Sunday and Thursday to get ready and everything. So look forward to having him back on, and the struggle that it will be. That's going to be a busy week for us. But I had a really fun time talking to him. Look forward to having him back on. And, I'm just so interested to see how the NFC is going to unfold, just because it never unfolds the same way 2 years in a row, or at least it hasn't. I'm sure that with all this talk about how it hasn't changed, that this will be the year that the Cowboys repeat finally. But we'll have to wait and see on that. So now we close the book on the Commanders, and now we head out to Philly, talk about the Eagles on our next episode. And we're going to have an old friend, Brandon Lee Gowton from Bleeding Green Nation and BGN Radio, coming in to help us preview the 2022 Eagles and talk about the, you know, them kind of being the Redskins of 2021, where they got off to a slow start, like a 2-6, 2-5 start or whatever it was. They had the late push at the end of the season, and they ended up making it to the playoffs and everything. They got boosted early by the Buccaneers, but the fact that they made the playoffs after starting 2-4, 2-5 under a first-year head coach was an accomplishment all into itself. And they made some big moves during the offseason and are looking to maybe be that team that is the champion of the NFC East this time, with all of the musical chairs they have with division winners out there in the NFC East. So be sure to tune in to that on Tuesday, when Brandon and I will preview the 2022 Philadelphia Eagles. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground.